Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Plus, get free premium delivery on any bed with Base. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store today.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
I'm Leo Phillips, host of This Must Be The Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With, an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network, wherever you're listening from right now, think about hitting that subscribe button. We put out interviews multiple times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Consequence of Sound. And would love to keep you up to date on all of those. Obviously, you're a music fan, you're an interview fan, hit that subscribe button. You can do it wherever you get your favorite podcasts from, like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can also subscribe at YouTube if that's more your speed. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, he's one of my favorite artists, Sam Beam of Iron and Wine. Sam's just put out a collaborative record, Iron and Wine and Calexico, the album Years to Burn. This follows the one they did back in 2005 called In the Rains. And we're going to do some compare and contrast, but mostly we're going to be looking at what made up this beautiful record called Years to Burn. The improvisational jazzy elements that we find in here, and lots of themes about time, not only in song titles like Your Own Time and of course in the album title with Years to Burn, but it's a theme that Sam has come back to many times over his career, something that's been on his mind. In fact, we'll use that seg to talk about probably his most famous album, Our Endless Numbered Days, which he just released earlier this year as a deluxe edition for its 15th anniversary. That's the album that had Naked As We Come on it. We'll talk about what that song has meant to him and the fans through the years, and about the demos that's included on that deluxe edition. Also earlier this year, he took it out and did a live version with the Los Angeles Philharmonic, a very powerful moment for Sam that he tells us about. And speaking of tours, the Iron and Wine Calexico tour runs July through November, and it sounds like there might be more dates after that. He's always a lovely human being to talk to. It's Kyle Meredith with Iron and Wine.
Hey, Kyle, it's Sam.
I know it's been a few years since we've caught up, but I'm really excited to, especially behind a couple of records that you put out this year, the deluxe edition of Our Endless Number Days, but more recently, this brand new record with Calexico and Years to Burn, which is all kinds of fantastic. Congratulations on this.
Thanks, man. Thanks for the kind words. It's fun to make.
Yeah, and it's, you know, as it's told now, you know, it's almost been 15 years, I think 14 years since you all did it the first time with In the Rains.
Yeah.
With it being, you know, I should ask this. Is it connected to In the Rains? Is this an album? Is Years to Burn something that has to speak to that record?
I don't think it does. I mean, I definitely feel like we, you know, it's hard to say. It doesn't really, like, pick up a baton and go anywhere, except it was informed by the way that we interacted on tour last time. You know, the last time that we made a record, we didn't really know each other, so we just kind of showed up in the studio and shook hands and made some music. And then we kind of learned to play together as a band and learn each other and what everyone's strengths were later on tour, you know, because we toured it for about a year after we put it out. You know, come to find out, John and Joey are incredible improvisers and feed off of, like, spontaneity and that kind of thing. I didn't really leave space for them for that kind of stuff on that first record because I didn't really know that about them. But I definitely knew it this time. And so when we went into the studio, we were definitely sort of picking up where we left off as a band. I mean, thematically, there's not really a through line, but I do feel like as a group of people, we kind of picked up where we left off.
I mean, it was not too long after this that you started incorporating more, not too long after In the Rains, that you started incorporating more jazz type of sounds into your own songwriting. Did that spur from those early Calexico, that tour?
Yeah, questionably. I mean, I can't say, like, what specific things they were, you know, like, specific sounds that they helped shape, but they helped shape, like, a desire for collaboration, you know, opening up the sound of what Iron and Wine was to playing with other musicians, incorporating other styles of music, you know, feeling like it was more of a more open palette than I had originally maybe guessed. And yeah, playing with Joey and John was definitely indispensable for that kind of transition, for sure.
You hear that all throughout the record, but I think you especially hear that on the Bittersweet, which, yeah. I mean, this is a track that sounds
so corny.
Yeah, well, it sounds loose and structured at the same time. I mean, it's how did that one come together? Because it does still sound like three songs put together, but there's still something that does bring it all along.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, because there's a sequence and we say that it's part of a piece, you say, okay, your brain just sort of submit and you accept it. Yeah, I came in with the song, the Tennessee Train song, and for some reason, Joey was adamant about making this one a long playing record, you know, like a full length record, where I was kind of imagining it as a short play EP like we did last time, you know, just a small collection of songs. But fair play. I mean, he wanted to do a long one, so it meant, like, let's figure out how to make it longer. I mean, I liked the challenge. It was fun. So we basically took a couple of the chord changes from that song and stretched them out and improvised over them. I think it was Joey's suggestion that Jacob translate some of it into Spanish and, you know, just sort of opened your mind up to the possibilities. And you didn't really have a really fixed idea of what the thing was supposed to sound like or the shape of these. It was kind of just a matter of, you know, opening yourself up to what could happen. And then, I mean, the title and the whole triptych idea came about when we were doing one of the overdub passes on Tennessee Train, and Sebastian Steinberg, our bass player, like leaned in. You know, we're all letting our last notes ring out before they, you know, cut the tape off. And, you know, just being silly, because it's a kind of a somber song, you know, leans in and says, "Life is bittersweet." And so it just seemed like too corny. I had to incorporate it into like the whole thing and make it like a musical suite. Just sometimes serendipity, you know, blesses you or bites you in the ass, however you want to take it.
I mean, if nothing else, it's a good dad joke on the record. It's a good dad pun, you know.
it's so corny.
it also does solve the, I mean, at eight tracks, you know, that is an album, but that being three songs in one, I mean, it sort of equals the whole thing out to an even 10, if you want to look at that. So there's your...
Math is hard, though. Let's change the subject. Math is too hard for me.
Was it really just a four-day project in the studio?
Yeah. I mean, I like having a deadline. It kind of forces you to make decisions and move on, not get too precious about things. And Joey and John were game. You know, they're kind of game for whatever challenge you throw at them, which is, you know, why we're such kindred spirits. It forces you to see what you're doing as a snapshot of what you were doing that day, the best you could do that day, instead of, like, the best you could ever hope to achieve. And I think it's really healthy. It's healthy for me.
Well, it sounds amazing when I think of that in context, because you could have told me that you all worked on this in the studio for 3 months and I would believe you. You know, it sounds so finished.
Well, luckily, I mean, no, thanks, man. I mean, luckily, you know, I like to play with, I've been blessed, you know, with a lot of really talented collaborators. You know, you just sort of been collecting this group of, cherry picking these group of musicians over the years who, you know, just are great listeners. They're all sort of producers and arrangers in their own right. And so there's never a shortage of good ideas in the room. It's kind of a matter of, you know, weeding through those and just sort of picking the best one, which is a great problem to have.
And I know a lot of those songs, I mean, they start out as kind of your idea, but different than, you know, In the Rains, you know, you've got a song like Joey brought in, Midnight Sun, which, you know, here you are now adding to someone else's. What's your approach, you know, when you're taking someone else's song like that?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I like teams. I get tired of monologuing all the time. It's great to be sort of, you know, in the backfield. I mean, my take is just to see what direction he wants to go, throw some ideas. If any of them stick, you know, help him develop what he likes about them. I love singing with other people, too. So that kind of collaboration, that role in the collaboration is always a joy for me.
Let you, in a way, almost become the producer for a second, it sounds like, in that sense.
Yeah, for a second.
I mean, I guess you are a producer. I think it was Nico Case who said that, you know, last year. She's like, I am a producer. I produce music. So it's sort of splitting hairs when
I mean, that's such a broad term, you know, with so many different definitions. But yeah, I don't need a producer to make a record, but I do like working with different people. Like, because they're a collaborator too. Some producers are emotional enablers and some are technical enablers, but they're all the idea to be a maker and a collaborator.
There's a line in the press release, your quote, where you said, "Life is hard, awesome, and scary as shit."
No, that's language.
Like that's nothing new for our interviews together. You know, I don't know if you were trying to summarize what you were singing about on this record or just giving a quote for the sake of giving a quote, but that's what I thought. Like, you know, how has life been in the last couple years as far as a mirror into what we're hearing on this record?
I mean, I think we write about grown-up things. You know, Joey and I both write from a midlife perspective rather than, you know, a romantic vision of, you know, love or fear or whatever, you know, whatever part of life. You know? And so, yeah, it's born out of experience. It's just a way to describe a set of songs that's not a clear through line, not a clear, like, thematic through line. It's about, you know, broad reflection on life in midlife, which can be complicated.
Well, I mean, I guess that feels like it plays into the title a little bit, which I've heard you play around
for
with
sure.
Because there's many times that you can, there are many ways that you can kind of deconstruct the word "years to burn," but when you pair that up with how the album ends with "In Your Own Time," it does seem like, you know, you use the word midlife. I didn't want to project that, but it seems like that sort of does encapsulate a lot.
Yeah, I mean, title was fun in a way where it sort of talked about tangentially or just loosely about what most of the song dealt with in one way or another. And also, you know, just the time, the length of time that had passed between this project and the last project. The last song is a really old song. Yeah, that's one of my first songs. It's the first song that, one of the first songs I think Joey and John ever heard that I did. It was like from the batch of songs from like my very first record, like Creek Drank the Cradle kind of time. And then it has lines about, you know, family, come meet the family, sit with us, and you can be vulnerable. Someone will catch you if you want to fall. It's just about being vulnerable with friends and enjoying, feeling safe and, you know, community. I thought it was a fun way to end the record.
What's interesting then, how, and I'm probably forcing this, how that connects with, yeah, this deluxe edition of our Endless Numbered Days. Because again, I'm just going by the titles here. You know, In Your Own Time, Years to Burn, and you've got Our Endless Numbered Days. What
yeah,
a time
so
to
many
put
days and times and it's a mouthful. I should say all the titles all together 10 times.
Is that a coincidence that it all came out like that?
No, I mean, well, yeah, I do think it's a coincidence. You know, again, it's not long. It took Joey and I to, I mean, let's just chalk it up to just monumental procrastination. But the Endless Number of Days, you know, the anniversary kind of thing. You know, I think it's just, you know, there's thematic through lines in the different records. Mostly because they're all written by me, and those are things that I like to, I don't know, it's just where my mind goes when I sit down to write a song. I mean, not every time, but often I return to these ideas, you know, what we do with our days, how many we have, and yeah, it's a pretty generous subject to me, I guess.
With going back to that album, because on this deluxe edition, you've got, you know, the demo versions of it on there as well. What was that revisit like? Did you spend any time kind of heading back to that part of your life?
Well, I had to. I hadn't really listened to any of these songs. I had to learn them because we're going to play them on tour.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, it's always a kick in the head, you know, to see a photo of yourself from a time that, you know, a photo that you hadn't seen in a really long time. I don't know. I think I definitely feel like there was a time in my life where I was much more self-conscious, but I find those kind of snapshots really fun now for some reason. I don't know. I don't have the same. I'm not really like, it's so far removed at this point that it's really fun to see them as like a time capsule and really wonder who that person was. Some things I remember, some things caught me by surprise, and I didn't remember making those sounds or putting those ideas out, and it's really fun to do.
It's interesting to hear those demos too, because the song is there. You know, I mean, it sounds like you kind of elaborated a little bit with extra instrumentation once the studio, you know, versions came around. But it feels like that they were really the connection between that first record and what became Endless Numbered Days.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, it's funny. You know, once you playing with arrangements and things as much as I've done over the years, you realize like every choice that you make has an emotional weight. Like, or a song like those songs, you can, you know, you can sing them a cappella, and they'll hopefully hold up. You know, a decent song will hold up. And so, whatever you decide to put underneath it, you know, musically, sonically, to support it, has an emotional weight, whether it's propulsive or dissonant or beautiful. You know, and you have endless choices. It's really fun to really manipulate that and see what works, and contradict to what you're saying. You know, it's kind of a freeing, really fun, creative approach, I think. I don't know. I get it. I like that kind of stuff.
not every song is representative in demo. Were there songs that didn't, were they more studio creations? Like, I look at Each Coming Night, there's no demo present.
I couldn't find it, or, you know, maybe it was like too similar and didn't really make any sense to like put on there because it wasn't that far removed from the one that ended up on there. Yeah, someone just couldn't find. That's what happens.
And then Naked As We Came, you know, I want to bring it up because this has seemingly become one of your most popular originals. Does it stand out in a different way than the others do because of how other people have kind of grabbed onto it?
I definitely played it a lot more than the others. But no, I don't know. They all kind of feel like, you know, part of a time in my life that I'm so connected to, but don't remember totally, you know, like sort of like a dream that you remember when you wake up, but it keeps fading. But yeah, that song's been really I've been really blessed with that one.
Say that about a lot of your songs.
People really connect with that one.
Did you already, you played these with the Los Angeles Philharmonic, right? That already happened, right?
Yeah, that was super fun. Yeah, David Campbell, who's an arranger, conductor and arranger for lots of film scores and different pieces, did some arrangements for those to sort of flesh them out and fill them out and technicolor them out. It was really fun.
It's interesting, you know, it's like a whole new version of these songs, you know, the demos, the studio version. Yeah. Now you've got this orchestrated version. Is there a thought on maybe releasing that, the live version of it?
Yeah, we recorded some of it. I haven't decided. I think we're going to do a lot more of those concerts after this Calexico stuff kind of wraps up, and then sort of make a decision about those kinds of things. It's really fun. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it was fun for me. Hopefully the audience had fun too. but I really enjoyed myself. It's also fun to, you know, just be in the middle of not many people go see the symphony anymore, let alone stand in the middle of them and sing. It's really, man, I got to say, it's not easy to forget. It's really fun.
I bet. Yeah, and the tour with the Calexico, that runs July through November.
I think there's already some talk about going a little bit further, too.
Awesome.
But we'll see.
I mean, you're setting yourself up for us wanting a trilogy. Now you've done two. You know, you've got a Before Sunrise moment happening here.
Well, we'll see what happens 14 years from now. We'll be talking.
I love that it's 14 that you'd be looking at, too. Not like a big round, not 20, not 15, like 14.
Yeah, we try to find strong prime numbers next time. last time we were talking about it the other day, last time it's been so long that last time it was like right before the iPhone came out. We all had cell phones, but there was no like, you know, jets and computer information superhighway in your pocket. And so I wonder, 14 years, maybe we'll just, you and I would just have to think our interview together and we'll transmit our emotions together and put that out.
I feel like that'd be a nice way of talking to you still, but hopefully we talk many more times in the 14 years until then. So
I hope so, man. You gotta pick up the phone when I call.
I'm always here, dude. You just gotta, you know. I want to catch this tour. You know, I do hope to catch one or even a couple dates on this tour, and then turn right around. I mean, this is the collaborative record. Are you already looking at the next solo record too, or are you just kind of waiting for the tour to end?
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of in the middle of this one right now. I mean, I'm kind of always writing, but I haven't, nothing's really taken shape as far as what the next will be. Stay open to what happens right now.
Well, I'm always looking forward to it. Sam, it is always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Kyle. Thanks, man. Likewise.
And hit me up anytime. I'll just be waiting for your call. Waiting, patiently, staring.
Right there, yeah. I'll be there. I'll get you.
All right, man. Take care, and I'll see you soon.
All right, bud. Thanks. Bye.
Sam Beam, Iron and Wine, the new Iron and Wine Calexico record, Years to Burn, is out now. I forgot to ask if Years to Burn was even a pun on Joey Burns being in the band. Hey, Sam, you got to call me back. I forgot to ask you that question. Hopefully. I'll be waiting. Now, for you fans who want to take this further, I thought I'd include a couple more interviews I've had in the past with Sam. This one comes back from 2014, so it's been a few years. Sam and I got to reminisce on Uncovering Such Great Heights, which is around the 10th anniversary of the Garden State soundtrack. We also talk about his collaboration with another one of our buddies, Band of Horses frontman Ben Bridwell. We hear about him cleaning out the archive closet and a little bit about what would become his next record, Beast Epic. Part 2 of Kyle Meredith with Iron and Wine.
Hey, Kyle.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well for a Tuesday. It's nice
to be
here.
For a Tuesday? Yeah. Is it different than the other days? I don't know.
Well, it's Tuesday.
Sure. And happy you're alive. I'm happy you're here.
Yeah.
Now it's good to see you. We got the new record, Ghost on Ghost. It's, it's last year, but it's not like old news yet.
Yeah, the newish one.
Yeah, the newish one. I know. I guess I've read about how you work and everything. It seems like that's already, like, I did that. Yeah. That's gone.
It does feel like that, but at the same time, you know, love to talk about myself, so let's do it.
Well, I do want to catch up with you. There's a few things going on. I know you've had some life changes. You moved around.
Yeah.
I saw really something fun. You have a little bit of background in film. I know you started in film school.
That's right.
And I guess now around your home, you're hosting a Harold and Maude screening.
Yeah, we did that just not too long ago. A friend of mine, Robert Malaza from the Modern Film School in Manhattan. He called me one time and had me introduce a movie when I was in New York one time. And then I just moved to North Carolina, to Durham. And so he had history. I think he went to Duke. And so he said, I'm going to be doing the film program there. Do you want to show a movie? And so we picked Harold and Maude because I could get up and, you know, present the movie and then play the Cat Stevens song. I totally butchered the song.
Did
it
you?
Was awful, yeah. It was terrible. It was so embarrassing. But anyway, the movie's great.
It almost seems obvious, like Iron and Wine does Cat Stevens. Like, of course Iron and Wine does Cat Stevens.
I know. That was a funny thing. Like, I really had to go figure out how to play it because I never played his song. I mean, I'm aware of his song, but wasn't like a big thing for me.
They're not exactly simple. Like, they sound simple. But they've got those odd changes that I guess...
Some of them do. The ones that I was playing did not. I wish I could use that as an excuse.
Yeah, not so much.
But some of the way he delivers the lines are not intuitive for me.
Yeah.
Whereas some songwriters, you know, you hear it once and you've got it. But yeah, it was pretty embarrassing.
Well, as far as films goes, if the music thing hadn't taken off, is that where you probably would have ended up? Making the movies and...
I mean, that was the dream, to make my own movies. But at the time I put the first record, I was working, you know, in the industry and teaching. So that's what I was doing.
Do you still have a pretty good critical mind about films?
To be honest, I don't get to see as much as I used to, as much as I would like to. There's only so many hours in the day. But I try to keep up.
Well, I know you've got a gaggle of kids. Like, how many times have you seen Brave and Frozen at this point?
You know, Brave was kind of scary for some of them, so we didn't get to watch that one too many times.
Yeah.
Or I didn't have to watch it so many times. Frozen, I saw in the movie theater. Fantastic movie.
I haven't seen it yet. No, yeah, that's what I want to hear. That's going to be the quote on this, by the way.
Please, yeah. Get some Disney kickback, please. No, it was fine.
You've been on Disney soundtracks, actually, haven't you? Zorro, or no, what was it?
Oh, yeah, that was a Disney
thing. That was Disney,
The Lone Ranger, yeah.
See, that's it, Lone Ranger, that's it. So you've already got a little Disney kickback.
Little. It's a good way of describing it.
There is and one more thing about movies, and I've got to bring this up. It's actually the 10th anniversary of Garden State.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, and it seems like that it's kind of a pivotal moment in your career.
Yeah, it was.
With that association.
It really was. It was wonderful to see, the people at the shows, just the numbers kind of blossom just because of the impact of this movie. I seemed to, at the time anyway, I had a lot of just dumb luck, really. I mean, to be honest, Ben Gibbard had asked me to cover that song, the Such Great Heights song. The Postal Service record was getting ready to come out, and they were going to do a single. And so he asked me for a B-side. The lazy bum didn't want to do his own things. And so he asked me to cover one and James Mercer to cover one. So we did it, and I guess the people from the movie just dug it. So it was just dumb luck, right place at the right time.
And it's still a little bit something you're associated with.
Yeah, very much so.
Which, I mean, isn't a bad thing. It's a beautiful cover. I mean, it's lasted this entire time.
Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, so many things just go away. Yeah, and we still have that.
There you go. I mean, it's a good song. You know, you can't really, it's hard to mess up a good song.
Yeah, that's true. And I noticed Zach Braff's actually got another movie. It's kind of the unofficial sequel. Have you heard about that? It's coming out.
He didn't tell me.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Is he calling you up? Like, you know what? It's time.
He hasn't called me recently.
It's time, Sam. Well, you got to be in the right place, right? You got to have to cover Let It Go is what it's going to come down to. That's going to be on the next Zach Braff movie.
That's right.
I guess there's a lot of anniversaries happening. I did read somewhere that you've kind of been going through the archives.
Yep. We're going to release some Clear the Closet, as they say.
Yeah.
There's a lot of material, you know, because I was just doing music in my spare time. Yeah. The first record was just a couple selections from stuff that I had laying around. And so there was a lot of other stuff laying around. And for some reason or another, we've just been, you know, I like to keep working on new things. Yeah. So it seemed dumb to put old stuff out. But, you know, over the years, people have been interested in. And so it seemed like a good time to put it out.
Yeah. How does that Sam look to you now when you look back at that?
I don't know. I don't like to look at him.
Yeah.
I just keep looking at the the other direction.
I think that too, because it's got to be. I don't know. Does it feel like you're wasting time or something like that? Because you're like, man, I could be working on this stuff. And
now no, it's nice. It's nice. Honestly, I mean, I'm teasing, but it's been nice to go back through and go, holy cow, who wrote that song? I don't even know.
Where
who
was
that
it? Was.
Yeah, it's really, it's a kick in the head. Because the time just flies by. I mean, it feels like, you know, on the one hand, it seems like, you know, a lifetime ago. And the other hand, it seems like yesterday. So it's always an interesting thing to do.
Yeah. Do you know when you're going to be releasing all that?
It should be sometime before Christmas.
You'd mentioned too that you moved to North Carolina.
Yeah, we spent the better part of the last decade in Texas, and turns out grandparents are a good amenity.
Yeah, they are.
And so all the grandparents are on the East Coast. So.
Yeah, that's gotta be nice though, because there's one thing about living in Texas and being in Texas and the idea of Texas, and then there's another thing about being away from Texas and then being able to romanticize it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is very true. Yeah. That's very true. I was definitely very aware of the reasons why I wanted to leave, but I'm also very aware now of what I miss very tangibly.
All of your neighbors who listen to this interview are going, what? Did I smell?
No, we all bitch and moan about it collectively, or we did when I lived there.
Speaking of smell, you live close to bird smell now.
That's right, yeah.
To Ben.
That's right, Mr. Bridwell.
Mr. Ben Bridwell, yeah.
Oddly enough, we're going into the studio in about 2 weeks to do some cover songs together.
So that's going
to
happen.
As of today.
Yeah, as of today, it's going to happen.
See what happens tomorrow. Yeah, we're excited. Yeah. We've been toying with the idea for ages, and so now we're finally making it happen.
I know your guys' career has kind of always been intertwined because it was his brother, right?
Well, his brother and I were really good friends in high school, and I knew Ben, and we just kind of kept in contact. You know, when we got older and realized we were both interested in movies, we were just kind of into music, and we would just kind of, you know, keep in touch. And so it's really, I owe Ben my entire career, to be blunt.
Wow.
He had a band called Carissa's Weird in Seattle, and they were talking to Sub Pop's label there about putting their stuff out, and he said, here, you know, he just put my stuff in their ear, and they called me. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, it's cool to kind of see it come full circle then, if you guys ever, if you actually make it to the studio in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
That's going to be great.
And so then when he started the Bands of Horses, we took him out on the road and sort of showed my friend off.
And now look where you've both went.
I know, it's crazy.
It's awesome. Let's get back to your current music then. So like I said, Ghost on Ghost is out. It's I had it as one of my top five records last year.
Well, you have great taste.
I do have great taste. It's fantastic. And I know you've kind of always had that thing. I love reading your reviews every single time because no one ever forgets what your very first record sounded like, even though you've really never sounded like that since your first record.
Pretty much.
This is kind of a jazz record for you. I mean, I think it's close to jazz as you've come so far.
Well, definitely. I mean, some of the tracks are straight up, you know, I mean, there's a song called Lover's Revolution. It's a straight up Mingus ripoff, you know, Haitian or Cuban, you know, knife fight. it was definitely, you know, I've been playing with more jazz players over the years. It was great to be able to, you know, use that sonic space to reinterpret some of your tunes or to surprise yourself. It seems to be important these days.
I do love what you do every time. Did you ever get tired of that though, like, guys, I've not sounded like that in so long?
Because
you spent your entire career fighting your reputation.
I think everyone does that to a certain extent though. I'm definitely, it's frustrating, and you wish that they could give your new material it's due just at face value. But at the same time, you know, no matter what you put out, someone's going to think it's great and someone's going to think it's a turd.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
right. We're all different. And so just keep on doing what you do.
Yeah. Do you find that some fans have an ownership of your songs?
I'm aware of people, you know, and the fans and their
passion.
Their passions,
passion,
I mean, bless them, you know.
I
thank God for them. But at the same time, you can't really make music for other people or art for other people. You have to sort of make it for yourself.
I do want to say it's kind of a really interesting time for a certain breed of singer-songwriters. You know, however you fall in that.
Yeah.
You're you're a solo artist who's always with a band, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for the most part.
But it is an interesting time because it looks like, you know, there were a bunch of you that kind of got your start around the same time who kind of were similar sounds that are just now or over the last few years going in these odd directions that do play against type.
Like who?
Ray LaMontagne just came out with a new record. I know he was, you know, a little bit later than you, but close. And his is getting time. All. I mean, he got with Auerbach.
What's he doing?
Yeah, it's he got with Dan Auerbach. So there, of course, you got a little bit of Black Keys sound on a few songs, psychedelic stuff
That's
going
cool.
on. But it just makes me think back. Like, it's not the first time it happened. Like Cat Stevens, you know, he did that. Dylan, obviously.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I think everything has slowed down. The attention span has slowed down a bit. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to compare myself to the Beatles, so please don't misunderstand me. But, I mean, their career was 10 years, and look at the difference between their first record and their last record.
Right.
I mean, Jesus.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, then people were putting out a record, two records a year, you know what I mean? And now you're lucky if you get one record every 2 or 3 years.
Right.
You know, there's just so much music that I think... there's so many bands to keep track of their trajectory or whatever. It's hard. It's more complex.
Yeah. Well, I just like seeing what all of you guys are doing because, like, and I was just coming at, like, Lee Hazelwood and Nielsen and all of them, how they would take it. Because being a solo artist, whether you're playing with a band or not, it seems like when you're a solo artist, it would be tougher, actually, to change the game, change your own game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, is that true?
You know, there's different camps. You know, some people refine what they do and do it over and over really well.
Yeah.
And I feel like I, for better or for worse, came from a fine arts background where it was hammered from the beginning. You know, you're only as good as your next idea.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you're really your own worst enemy in a certain sense. I mean, you have to realize that you only... draw from the same well each time, but you sometimes surprise yourself at how large the well is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And so you just try to keep yourself entertained, honestly. You know, sometimes the audience gets pushed away because of that, and sometimes they embrace it and are excited by it.
Yeah.
You know, it just depends.
So what happens next then? Because, like we said, I'm sure you're already working ahead and...
Yeah, well, we got the old stuff, like you said, the closet, the dusty stuff that's coming out, and then the stuff with Ben. I've been starting to write some songs. There's an artist, her name's Jessica Hoop. She's great. And I've been working with her with some songs, and then my own stuff. I think, and the Calexico record, I did a record with Calexico about 10 years ago now, too. I don't know
where anniversaries.
Where that time went.
Yeah.
But we've been talking about doing a few things.
And a sequel.
Something.
You've got to the sequel part of your life, Sam.
I guess so.
Well, I can't wait to hear all of these things. And you know, whenever the next record gets done, for your own Iron & Wine record.
Yeah, me too. We'll see what that ends up being like.
Yeah. All right, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
it was great talking to you.
Yeah, likewise.
We'll see you around. All right, cool.
2014 interview with Sam Beam of Iron & Wine. Now I'll do one more part three. This was back, I think this was the first time that he and I met. It was at Bonnaroo down in Manchester, Tennessee in 2011. I was just getting my interview legs under me, and Sam was, he was very nice to me. It's part three of Kyle Meredith with Iron & Wine.
Hey, man, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you so far?
I'm good. Well, we just got here, and so we're just sort of acclimating.
Yeah.
To the heat and the vibes.
It's not your first Bonnaroo. In fact, you must have liked 1 year so much that you've even released it as an album in the past.
Yeah, I don't know whose idea that was, but to start with, but it seemed like a good idea. We had a great time playing. I think that was the first time we played here. It was fun. We've been back. This will be the second time we've been back since then. So it's three all in all.
Is Bonnaroo is that on your radar usually? Is this an important place to stop through?
You know, when we're busy in the summer, I definitely love to play this festival. You know, it's fun. People are into music here. You know, there's some festivals where it's more so than others. This is definitely one where people come to listen, which is always fun. It's empowering as a player, as a performer, you know.
And you get a big group of people from everywhere in one spot, so I guess that even cuts back on the touring a little bit.
Yeah, it's an economical way. I like your thinking there.
Let's talk about this new record. Big leap forward on the music. You've gone in a few different directions on this one. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. You know, it's another genre potpourri of an Iron Wine record. you know, I feel like, you know, with each record I try to do something new, you know, push yourself in some direction that you haven't gone before, you know, just to keep yourself engaged and hopefully the audience. So this was no different. It feels like there's a bit more of an R&B element, you know, the arrangements feel a little more polished. I don't know. There's more horns.
Well, what was the mindset in that? Because it does have the R&B feel, and there's a pop sensibility I think you've talked about in the past, too. Yeah. When you went into this, did you have an idea? Were you listening to certain things that you wanted to emulate?
Nothing different than what I normally listen to. I like all kinds of different music, and always have. So it's fun to be able to include some of those things in my music now. But no, I don't really go into it with a preconceived idea. That would mean I would have to have some kind of a forethought and initiative, and I don't really have either of those. So I just sort of take it as it comes, you know, keep your ear open and see what's going on and, you know, listen for things that you could try. I mean, if at this point you kind of know, and I play with some similar, you know, the producer's the same person. You know, there's several people that have been with me the whole time, so we kind of know when we're treading too familiar territory, you know, and we like to push each other, you know, so it's fun.
There's one outstanding moment on the record, and I think it's the last track.
Oh,
with your fake name.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
A massive jam at the end of that. That had to be fun in a studio.
It was definitely fun, yeah. You know, it was one of those things where it just happened, and luckily the tape was rolling.
I mean, I know a lot of people will even, when you're in the studio, I mean, live it's a different thing to do a big jam out like that, but when you're in a studio you usually pull back, but you decided, yeah, that stays on the record.
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of went with the idea of the tune. Yeah, we definitely pushed it in that direction, you know, the idea of this sort of mantra of, you know, we'll become this, we'll become all these things at one time, it just sort of sinks into just chaos, which is kind of a fun metaphoric idea.
In some previous interviews you had mentioned 70s pop.
Yeah.
Did you grow up on a good diet of 70s pop, and if so,
which ones? Of course. Well, I mean, I remember, you know, my parents' car smelled like Fleetwood Mac. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? When you remember those days, you remember the smell of the car and what the window crank looked like and what sounds were. You know, it was Elton John and all that stuff that we grew up with. You know, there are lots of favorites.
And one other thing, I was just doing research. This might be common knowledge, but you live in a household full of women.
That's right, yes, yes.
I think once I realized that, the song Woman King took on a whole new meaning for me.
yeah, I think that was a self-fulfilling prophecy.
You're a bit outnumbered.
Yeah, for a long time now, it's very, very easy for me to accept being outnumbered. And just, you know, I feel like I've become some kind of Zen monk. I don't know. You know, you just sort of learn to give up quickly and enjoy your life that way.
I guess it would affect your songwriting too, though. It just seems like
it affects your whole life. You know, I have a lot of daughters, and so it affects a lot of children, and just in general, whether boys or girls, affects your life. And so, hopefully, it affects your songwriting, because hopefully, you know, you write from not necessarily, you know, diary entries like, you know, from your direct experience, but you're engaged the way that you experience life and choose to, you know, interpret it.
All right, man. Well, it was certainly a pleasure talking to you. It's great to have you back here at Bonnaroo. Look forward to the set, all right?
Likewise. Thank you. Right.
2011 interview with Iron and Wine, taped backstage at Bonnaroo 2011. Again, the brand new record, Calexico and Iron and Wine. It's called Years to Burn. Thanks so much to Sam for all the conversations. And hopefully it doesn't take another 14 years for us to talk again. I doubt it will. The man stays busy. Hey, before you get out of here, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. You can do it anywhere you get your favorite podcasts from. That includes iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can also subscribe at YouTube. And in any of those, please give a hello. Tell me where you're listening from. And if it's in the podcast, of course, you can give the series a rating and leave a review. I tell you, that helps a ton. If you're a fan of this series, it's a great way to help out. After that, head to WFPK.org, where you can find me Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern for the Kyle Meredith With radio show, where you can also find some bonus episodes of the series there as well. ConsequenceOfSound.net has your music and film news. I'm also over at Twitter at Kyle Meredith, Facebook/Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition. Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Plus, get free premium delivery on any bed with base. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store today.